Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 36 of season 4 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com When Harry Met Sally, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Lisa Leahy of Rabbit Hole Podcasts. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thanks, Rob. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, I'm great. I'm very glad. Last time we had you on was season 1. But, I'm glad that we were able to find some time to bring you back for season 4. We almost recorded twice having you on for season 3, just so people know, but, you know, you got some sort of award or something like that, you know, some, you know, they decided, you know, the state of Rhode Island decided to, that apparently it's more important the state of Rhode Island than being on my podcast, but what can you do?
I know. I'm right. Bound by my career sometimes.
Understandable. We all are.
Yes.
You know, but we do our best. We do our best. So thank you for finding the time to come back this time and talk about Harry Met Sally. You know, it's a little different than Die Hard. You know,
it is a little different. It's a different kind of movie, but still a favorite. So
yes.
We can run with that.
Yeah, and we shall. So. Minute 36 opens with the older couple, the documentary couple. This is, I believe, the fourth documentary couple that we've come across. They continue their story and ends with Harry continuing to flip cards. So we ended things on Friday, midway. This is one of the first times that one of these documentary clips gets cut off at the minute. Okay, we have this older couple that are talking. They started talking on Friday about how they kept missing each other in so many different places. And today they continue with that. And, you know, the woman says, I worked for a very prominent neurologist. And at the same time, they're basically talking over one another as it goes through, which shows that they have great chemistry, despite the fact that they are not a real couple. You know, these are two actors telling a real story. You know, I love that. I love the idea of taking a real story, giving it to actors and say, okay, run with it and make it sound more fascinating than if you were just to have the real people talking. And this movie does a great job with that. There's no question about it. So she says, I worked for a very prominent neurologist. And at the same time, he says, as a nurse, where I had a practice on the 14th floor of the very same building. And then she goes, we never met. And he goes, never met. Can you imagine that? You know where we met? In an elevator. I was visiting family. In the Ambassador Hotel in Chicago, Illinois. He was on the 3rd floor. I was on the 12th. I rode up 9 extra floors just to keep talking to her. 9 extra floors. So, first of all, it's a great story. Okay? And we get so much information just from the way that they're talking. I mean, the fact that he, first of all, says that she's a nurse. But, you know, we find out that he's a doctor. You know, because he says he just mentioned the fact that he had a practice on the 14th floor, you know, so that works really, really well. The way that their lives were connected, you know, somehow.
It's so strongly connected, like they should have intersected at some point.
Yeah.
And that it sort of like adds to the interest of the fact that they never met. Like, yeah, you're in the same building, but if you work in two different careers, that makes sense. You'll have different hours. But the fact that they worked both in the medical field is fascinating.
But just because
they never crossed paths.
But they worked in the same medical field. But let's say they're working in a hospital. You know, they don't say where, you know, where specifically it is. If they're in a hospital, you know, why are they so surprised that they never met?
It's true.
Unless they were the only two medical offices in that building. Okay, then I can sort of understand it.
Sure.
You know, again, this is minor information. Doesn't really matter. The one thing that
it's a
bothers
nice story,
me,
you
it's
know,
a
like
great
they
story.
Think it's important. They think that, you know, at least walking into the building, they should have maybe met on the subway or encountered each other on the subway somehow. Like, and what's interesting is for all we
or,
know, maybe
or in
they
the elevator.
Did pass each other, but they never actually spoke.
Correct.
So maybe they had. I mean, the idea of coincidences, the idea of, you know, meeting up with each other, you figure rule of, you know, what is the word I want? Probability. They must have encountered each other, but maybe didn't connect, or it's authentic and they never met. And that's just fascinating that like these two people who, end up bound together for so long, like had that kind of connection.
Yeah, no, and it's great. Again, the thing, one thing that bothers me about all the research I've done about this movie is that I only found one of the documentary couples where we know where their story came from. You know, the very first one is the parents of one of the producers of the movie. After that, Rob Reiner I've listened to the commentary track of just Rob Reiner and the commentary track of Rob Reiner, Nora Ephron, and Billy Crystal, and they don't mention it at all so far. Who knows what's going to be, over the next hour of this movie. But up until now, nothing. You know, they tell us about the first one. You know, but not. I mean, I mentioned this on Friday. This actor who plays the husband here, okay, is one of Carl Reiner's best friends. His name is Bernie Hearn, and he was the best man at Carl and Estelle Reiner's wedding in 1943. That shows how far back they went. I mean, this movie came out in 89. So we're talking 45 years after Rob Reiner's parents got married. Okay. He cast his father's best friend, you know, in this small little role, but this small authentic role, which works really well. I mean, the two of them have just such great chemistry together. You know, the way that they look at each other, the way that they talk over one another, but they're not doing it in a condescending way. You know, they're trying to compliment one another with their conversation. You know, like how sometimes they'll say you have twins that will talk and they'll finish each other's sentences and stuff like that. Here they don't specifically
just like that.
That's right. But the two of them, they're not really finishing each other's sentences, but the conversation, it's a story that sounds like they've told this story hundreds of times to people, you know, about how amazed they were that after all the close encounters that they might've had over the years, you know, that never happened. They finally met, you know, in a hotel lobby while they were at probably a conference she was visiting family.
She was visiting family. Yeah.
You know, and we don't know why he was there. He might have been there for a medical convention or something like that. You know,
yeah, who knows?
You never know.
He might have been with another woman.
Maybe. Well, if he was, he spent another 9 floors talking to her.
9 floors.
Nine floors.
See, you go from Ferris Bueller in 9 times to 9 floors.
There you go.
And both
and both take place in Chicago.
There you go. See, it's a Chicago thing.
Stories, because this story takes place in Chicago. Okay. So what do you know about the Ambassador Hotel in Chicago? Do you know anything about it?
Absolutely nothing.
Okay. All right. That's fair. So it's now known as the Ambassador Chicago, but it was known for many decades as the Ambassador East. Okay. What year do you think the hotel came into existence? Let's say, I don't know if it was built then or whatever.
1842.
1926.
Not even close.
Not even close. That's fine. It's located.
I told you, I authentically don't know anything about it.
That's fine. But it's fun to hear the guesses, you know, to see how, it's
especially when it comes to dates. I don't have the faintest idea about anything important.
Wait a second. You're a teacher. Oh, you don't teach history,
I don't
though.
Teach history.
Right.
Okay. English.
You teach English. You need to know what year Shakespeare wrote.
I don't usually. I don't, because I don't think some of that minutia is important to the content. I mean, I could tell you about the time period and such, but I'm not typically asking my students, you know, what date did this get published? It's not as interesting as getting them to think about, you know, what it is and the impact it has on them. So.
Right. Okay.
I don't know. There might be teachers out there cringing listening to this, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. So there were many celebrities that actually lived there. Doris Day lived there. Helen Hayes, Lana Turner, and Eunice Kennedy.
Oh.
Okay. There's a famous movie that there is a big scene that takes place in this hotel. A movie from 1959. I'll give you a hint. All right, I'll get a Hitchcock movie from 59.
Oh, this is even worse that I don't know what it is then, because I'm a big Hitchcock fan. I am weak on my trivia.
North by Northwest.
Oh, shame on me.
Yes, a shout out to the Movies by Minute version of North by Northwest with that Jim O'Kane did a few years ago, the group project. That was a group project, I think, number four, where they did North by Northwest. So I'm sure they talked extensively there about the Ambassador Chicago, which is now known as the Ambassador East. It changed its name in 1978, and it's been bought and sold numerous times since then, but it is now known once again as the Ambassador Chicago. But then it's now part of the Hyatt brand.
That'll do it.
So yeah, and then in 2002 they actually created a sister hotel called the Ambassador West.
Well, that makes sense.
Yes, of course. Why not?
A lot of thought involved in naming of that particular hotel.
Yes. And back to another point in history, in 1959, you know, the same year that North by Northwest took place here. So Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip, they came and stayed at the hotel and had an extravagant meal there, I guess.
Oh, very nice. Yes. Well, I guess if you're going to be the king and queen, your meals should typically be extravagant.
Yes, especially, you know, if Hitchcock filmed in the same place, you know.
That's it. See?
Yeah.
Got to do it right.
That's right. So, yeah. So then the scene fades. You know, we're done with this documentary couple. And we have this very strange, we see a desk and we see something moving on the desk. Do you know what that is?
I don't know what they're called, but I've always wanted one. One of those like dipping duck kinds of statues where it's the water balances and the bird kind of bobs up and down into the water.
Correct. So
I don't know what they're called.
There,
is there a name for it?
Yes, there is. There are numerous names for it. So there the official name are drinking birds, but they are also known as insatiable birdies. Dunking birds, drinky birds, water birds, dipping birds, and sippy chickens.
That's funny. Sippy chick. They don't look like chickens. That's weird.
I don't know. That's what they're called. And they basically they're toys that mimic the motions of a bird drinking from a water source.
Yeah.
Okay. Some people say that these are examples of perpetual motion, but it's not. This is not perpetual. That's right.
They don't move the way that would be. The perpetual motion is the beads, right?
Yes, I think so.
Because it's more even, whereas this is varied, so it wouldn't fit those parameters. Yeah,
right.
Is that right?
I think so. I'm not an engineer.
Apparently, I'm better in my science theory than I am in my historical facts.
Apparently, but I'm not good in either. Yeah, you know, I just have to look it up. You know, so. So basically the way that it works is the drinking bird consists of two glass bulbs that are joined by a glass tube, which is basically the bird's neck, and the tube extends nearly all the way from the bottom bulb and attaches to the top bulb but doesn't extend into it. All right, and you have fluid on the inside, usually colored so that you can see what it is. Usually they use some sort of dye. Okay. And what they remove all the air from it when it's manufactured so that you only have the fluid in there. And then you have like a beak attached to the upper bulb, and it has a felt like material on the end. Okay.
Usually, with the tail?
Yeah. No, what do you, no, not the tail.
Oh, the I'm other end, about, the top end.
I'm talking about the top end, the beak.
Oh, gotcha.
Right. Huh. And they usually decorate them. You have eyes and a top hat and tail feathers and things like that. And it pivots on an adjustable cross piece that's attached to the neck. And basically this is known as a heat engine, because what it does is it exploits a temperature difference to convert heat energy to a pressure difference within the device, and it performs mechanical work. So like all heat engines, it works through thermodynamic cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which basically means that the initial state of the system is the bird with a wet head that is oriented vertically. So what happens here? There's a process. Okay, you have the water evaporates from the felt on the head. It evaporates lower, the evaporation lowers the temperature of the glass head, and then the temperature decreases, causing some of the vapor in the head to condense, and then the lower temperature and condensation together cause the pressure to drop in the head. Okay, then the higher vapor pressure in the warmer base pushes the liquid up the neck. And then as the liquid rises, the bird becomes top heavy and tips over.
That's
Okay, and
cool.
when the bird tips over, the bottom end of the neck tube rises above the surface of the liquid in the bottom bulb. Okay, so at that point, a bubble of warm vapor rises up through the tube through the gap and displaces liquid as it goes. Then the liquid flows back to the bottom bulb. All right, and then the pressure equalizes between the top and bottom bulbs. So the weight of the liquid in the bottom bulb restores the bird to its previous vertical position. Okay, the liquid in the bottom bulb is heated by ambient air, which is at a temperature slightly higher than the temperature in the bird's head. So I never even thought about that this is the way it all works.
No,
I just thought it was something that just bobs back and forth, and that's it.
and it's interesting because the suggestion is that, like, I always thought that you would have to start it off, and it seems that it wouldn't.
It
Like,
sounds
how,
like it
like, if
doesn't,
you
right?
get one brand new out of the box, is this thing going to begin dipping on its own, or do you have to dip the nose first in order to start this cycle?
Absolutely no idea.
See, these are the things I think of, Robert.
Right. Okay. That's fair. That's fair. When do you think this idea was first thought of?
Oh, absolutely no idea. I wasn't even close when it came to the hotel, so don't ask me
Okay.
this
It
one.
was in the 1760s.
Get out.
Okay, it was created in Germany, and it was known as
Oh,
a
those Germans and their
pulse hammer.
engineering.
And in 1767, Benjamin Franklin visited Germany, and he saw one. And in 1768, he figured out a way to improve it.
And make it a toy that he could make money off of.
Yes. So
True American capitalism.
basically, so then there throughout the years there are a whole bunch of people that have had different types of patents on how to make these and everything like that. There's a Chinese version that came out in the 1920s, and in America, a man named Arthur Hillary got the U.S. patent in 1945, and he's the then through Bell Labs and all these different places, they finally were able to create this toy that which works. Yeah, what can I tell you? Works well.
That's kind of fun. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that I've always wanted, but I don't have the interest in spending the money on it myself.
Right. So the movie Dark Man from 1990, which was
There's a transition.
a
I think
strange
you
movie.
win the non sequitur award of
No,
the
but let me
day on that
explain.
one,
They
Rob.
actually use the bad guy uses two of these in the movie to set off explosions.
Oh.
That it wasn't it wasn't
It
completely
has
out of
been a
left field.
long time since I've seen that movie.
All right.
I have to go back, apparently. Add that to the list.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure also has that was a Sam Raimi movie, the Dark Man, right? Pee-wee's Big Adventure
Yes.
also has one that
Tim
features in it.
Burton, yeah.
Obviously, we have it in this movie. There are a whole bunch of movies other movies that do mention this type of thing. You have it in Max Payne. You have it in three different Alien movies: Alien, Alien 3, and Alien Covenant. Woody Allen used it in Sleeper. So we have a lot of places where you can find this in movies.
Do you think there's some sort of symbolic significance to this drinking bird in this movie, in When Harry Met Sally, where Harry's got one on his desk?
No, I think it just happens to be, I think Rob Reiner thought it was a good idea to put it on to have, Harry stare at it, and when he's somewhat depressed, when he's like bored or depressed to do it.
Well, it's interesting because you got to figure like some set designer or, Rob Reiner himself came up with this idea. It's like, all right, well, what would Harry's desk look like?
Yes.
you know, what was it he would space out and look at? And somebody came up with this and they were like, yes, that's the thing, you know? So you kind of wonder, okay, well, what is it about this thing that makes it so interesting, or not even interesting so much, but like a thing he would have on his desk? You know, there's certain people you can learn a lot about people based on their desks and their spaces. Correct. And I think the fact that Harry has this on his, and the fact that he kind of spaces out looking at it, you know, I think there's something to that. It shows that there's this guy who, one, likes the whimsy of it, but two, you know, probably gets caught up in that perpetual motion, even though it's not perpetual motion, but this idea of just back and forth and back, just getting caught up in it. And I think that's part of, you know, some of what the movie gets at too.
Right. I think you're right about that. But I also find it very interesting that this is the only thing we see in his office, because it's a very close shot.
Yes. And this is at the forefront of that shot. Yes. So it's like, here's what you're going to look at right now. Both Harry and you will be spacing out on
that's
this
right.
thing.
I mean, again, it's only shown for a few seconds, but still, you know, it's funny. You know, it pans, it shows it, then pans up, then pans back down. And, you know,
did we see anything about whether or not the profits for this particular toy went up after the release of this movie?
I didn't check into that. I'm not a marketing person.
You know,
it's a great question. Anyone out there who's interested in going to find that information out, please go. And, you know, you can write,
let us know.
You can write into Facebook and Twitter, you know, let us know how much you think this movie helped increase the sales of a, what did we call it? A dipping. What was the one that
Sippy Chicken?
Sippy Chicken, yeah. Insatiable Birdies. There you go.
I like that one.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to think about like what a big deal the duck phone was when, you know, Jersey Shore was out. So you got to figure this showing up in such a popular movie probably would have been a lot of Valentine's gifts based on this.
Could be. Even this movie came out in July.
At least it would have.
Even though the movie came out in July, but still, you know, Valentine's was last week.
It would have been, you know. VHS. I know. I guess that's fair.
Wait. You know, I have an idea. Today's your birthday, so we should buy that for you and send it to you on your birthday.
Yes. Oh my God, I love it. Yes, that would be a wonderful gift. Thank you. Send me all of the Sippy Chickens.
That's right.
Care of Movie Rob.
Well, sending them to Israel for me to send them to Rhode Island. I don't know.
I don't know. The Amazon truck already knows where I am, so I'm sure he'll just send more. FedEx and Amazon are good friends of mine.
Okay, could be. That's fair. Right. So, Lisa, happy birthday. You know, everyone should know today
Thank
is Lisa's
you so
birthday.
Much.
You know, and randomly we found this, you know, this wasn't done on purpose. You know,
it wasn't planned.
No, not at all. Not at all. And then we hear the phone ringing, and basically the rest of this minute is voiceover between Harry and Sally.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, first we hear Sally saying hello. You know, she's answering the phone, right? And then we hear Harry, "You sleeping?" "Nope, I was watching Casablanca. Channel please, 11. Thank you. Got it."
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, I love the way that they do this. You know, they just, you know, it's who knows what time it is. It could be 10 o'clock, could be 11 o'clock, could be 3 o'clock in the morning. Who knows? You know, and that the two of them are they've already gotten close enough that they're having these late night conversations about nothing. You know, yes. And this is.
Those are the best.
Yeah, of course. And this is pre-Seinfeld and all that stuff. So, you know, the fact that, you know, they thought of this idea basically. On the commentary, Rob Reiner mentions that that's what he and Billy Crystal were at the time were great friends. I don't know. I'm assuming they still are great friends also now, but at the time they used to call each other and have conversations like this. And that's why they decided to put it into the movie, because they thought it was, you know, this is something that really, really happened between them. You know, so they do it.
And
they do a great job of putting it together like that.
I just think there's this coziness to it. You know, like when you first get to know someone, and I know at this point in the film they have more of a history, like it's certainly past when they've met each other. But when you really have somebody you're close to in your life that you can spend hours on the phone with, or that you can just talk on the phone and just have nothing, you talk about absolutely nothing. And I love this concept of like watching a movie together separately. It's just like, you know, what's on TV, and you're just throwing the commentary back and forth the same way you would if you were in a movie theater.
You're not supposed to be talking during a movie. In the movie theater. I
know, but see, now you can. You know, with the advent of, like, home, you know, TVs and VCRs and being able to watch the movies at home, I think there's something to that. You know, I think there's definitely something comforting to even, like, watching old movies in bed kind of thing. Like, there's just something relaxing about it. And I like that, you know, I just love that he doesn't even get into it. Like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm watching Casablanca. Channel, please. You know, like, immediate, there's no question. He's going to put the same channel on. They're going to be watching it together. And I just think that's so sweet. It's one of my, it's definitely my favorite scene among many fun scenes in this film. But there's just something lovely about sharing that space with someone when you're just, you know, it's the last person you talk to at night. And at this point, it's not focused on a romantic connection.
Correct.
And I think there's really something great to that.
For sure. I agree with you on that. Now, I mean, having, you know, I grew up in the New Jersey area. So Channel 11, I know what it is. You know, that's WPIX. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's changed since then.
I don't have cable anymore, so I can't tell you, but it was definitely PIX for me too.
And I mean, basically,
it became Fox after a while. It became a Fox channel after a while.
So it started off in 1948, and it was an independent station from 48 to 1995.
Okay,
and then it was in 1995, it became a WB. Affiliate.
Oh gosh.
And that was between 1995 and 2006. Okay.
And then the CW.
And then after that, it became a CW in 2006 until now. You know, like for me, I remember as a kid, you know, whenever, you know, like Sunday afternoons, they would have, you know, just all these old movies on. And it was, you know, Channel 11 and Channel 5. Those were the five, yes. I think, is the Fox affiliate now. In the New York area, you know.
I never had a Channel 5. For us, it was like 10, 12, 6, and for like the local stations and stuff. And then you'd get into like 11 and like 25, I think. I can't remember what these numbers were. They're all
right,
like
but I'm also talking before cable. Channels. Once it was cable, everything changed.
That's
you
fair.
Know, once it, you know, I at that point when cable came out, you know, I was already living in the Midwest in Detroit. And then, you know, we would get, you know, TBS and we get WGN.
Yep. TNT.
TNT. Exactly. All that stuff.
Yes. For us, I think it was 11 and 64. That was the Fox station when I was growing up.
Okay. Could be. No, so I just like the fact that the accuracy that they just say, oh, Channel 11, mm-hmm. you know, and as this whole conversation is going on, they, you know, they give us all these great shots. We see Sally at her office. Okay. Which, mm-hmm. you know, we know she's a journalist. Harry is a political consultant, which I guess he just consults on dipping birds or something. I don't know. Don't really know.
And I have nothing to add to that. I am not into the political.
Yeah. No, I understand. No, we're not talking politics here. You know, not at all. But, you know, we see Sally's desk, which has a lot of things on her desk. You know, even in 1989, she already has a computer. In 1988, when I'm assuming they filmed this, or maybe they filmed in the beginning of 89, you know, she already has a personal computer on her desk. She has a whole bunch of different books and notebooks, and she has a tray that's filled with all these papers. She has some magazine that's open next to her. You know, you see the hustle. They show you the difference between, you know, Harry's office, there's nothing going on. But her office, there's the hustle and bustle of what's going on. You know, someone comes and brings her some sort of article to read, you know, to take a look at. She's on the phone. And then the shot changes and we see her in the supermarket. You know, she's at like a...
getting at the salad bar.
She's at the salad bar. And I love the fact that we can see behind her the whole row of cereal. You know, mm-hmm. just, you know, the ones that you can see, it's a little out of focus, probably because, you know, they didn't get permission from all these different, you know, companies.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Yeah.
But I recognized, you know, Captain Crunch, Life, Cheerios, Fruit Loops, Honey Smacks, Honey O's, mm-hmm. Golden Grahams, Grape Nuts. Those are the ones that I was able to make out while looking at them.
Wow.
There's more. But you know, those are the ones. We're not going to go into the history of any of those. Don't worry, we're good. We're good. Just but the thing that I found really interesting is that you know, we watch as she's taking the food from the salad bar, but all we see her take is she takes lettuce and like cherry tomatoes. They look like cherry tomatoes, actually. You know.
Yep, tomato, but they're not even like she's very particular. In fact, it's interesting because you haven't quite gotten to the dialogue yet, so I don't know if you'd prefer I wait, but the dialogue lines up very well in this moment with what she's actually
Right.
doing.
That's true. That's true. So the dialogue, they continue
You
talking
know.
about, well, so we'll go into the dialogue. They continue talking about Casablanca. You know, we.
Well, they get into Casablanca, but this is the low maintenance thing.
Right. No, but
And
low
she's
maintenance is
talking about
tomorrow.
how she likes what
The
she
low
likes.
maintenance is
Is it
tomorrow.
tomorrow?
Yes.
Why do I feel like this is right on the cusp then? Because I feel like when she's taking the tomatoes is when she says she likes what she likes. All right, I'll wait. I jumped.
That's
Sorry.
okay. You're.
It's hard with these minute by
Yes.
minutes.
It doesn't jump at that point. If you want to know exactly what you're saying with the tomatoes, she says, I never said that. That's what it comes down to, you know, when she
Oh,
does that.
that's right. Yeah, she never
Right. So
said
they have
that.
this conversation about Casablanca. So Harry says, now you're
Yep.
telling me you would be happier
Victor
with
Laszlo,
Victor
yeah.
Laszlo than with Humphrey Bogart and Sally. When did I say that? When we drove to New York. I never said that. I would have never said that. All right, fine. Have it your way. And
That's what it was. That was it. It was the have it your way line. And at that time, she's like rejecting a very particular tomato. Like, that's what it was. It was how it connected to how picky she is. And he was just like, yep,
yeah.
whatever.
No, I like the fact that that they do that. You're right. That just showing us in the salad bar. You know, first of all, we see that she uses like tongs and she checks each and every one of
Every
the
tomato.
tomatoes. As you know, and she only takes three. And the fourth one she rejects because it doesn't look right.
Yes. Well, there's nothing worse than biting into a foul
That
tomato.
is true.
So I can't say blame her because sometimes those tomatoes are a little
I can
lovely.
understand that. I can understand. And then we get a shot of Harry. As the dialogue once again changes to a new conversation, where he says, "Have you been sleeping?" And Sally goes, "Why?" And he goes, "Because I haven't been sleeping." And that's where the minute ends, basically, when he says that. But I love that we can
Right.
see that he's just sitting on the floor, throwing cards, you know, flipping cards into a bowl, right? But what's
In a mostly empty
not
space,
just
just
a
sitting on the
mostly empty
floor.
space, his apartment is empty, okay? This
Yeah.
basically tells us that Helen took everything. You know, he's left with nothing. He's got a bowl. That's what he's got in this
Right.
scene.
And some
Right, a
cards.
bowl and some cards. That's right.
Yep. And he hasn't done anything to replace it.
That's correct. Not yet, because he wants her, because maybe because he wants her to come back. Could be.
Yeah, it's true.
You know. So do you know what you would call what he's doing? The game that he's playing?
I can't remember. I do know there's a name for it, and I feel like when you tell me, I'll remember, but I don't know what it is off the
Okay,
top of my head.
it's either called a card flip or cards in a hat. Simple names,
That's the one. Cards in a hat. Yeah.
you know, not
Card flip, I've not heard of, though. That's interesting.
right. Basically, each of them, the way that you play the game normally, you know, when you're playing it with against someone else, is that each of them have five cards and they attempt to throw them one at a time into the hat. And each card that lands in the hat gains a point. Right? And sometimes people will play with full decks of cards.
The rest of us aren't always playing with a full
That's true
deck.
also. That is very true. But it got me thinking. I remember that that they also have the whole idea of people throwing cards, you know, throwing playing cards in like with accuracy. You know, using them as you know, in magic shows or you know, different.
Well, I think that makes sense. Like that'd probably be where it comes from. That would be the hat, you know, the magician's hat that
Right, it could be.
actually prompted
Right,
it.
it could be because they have like you know contests in places of who can throw it the farthest and the fastest and the highest and the best most accuracy and you know how who.
That's because we can't ever just enjoy simple things. We have to make it a conversation, that's right. No matter what we
or
do.
Or how many can you throw within a within a minute and things like that. Okay. When do you think it became popular with magicians to start doing this on stage, throwing cards accurately?
This is part of a show. Like this.
Yeah.
That seems
first of all,
it's
called scaling. That's the term used for it.
That's not one I'm familiar with. That's
okay.
Interesting.
It began in the 1800s.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, is that a clue?
No. That's not a clue.
Okay.
That's
good. There's a lot of years in those 1800s.
Yes, for sure. There is a magician known as named Alexander Herman, who became the first one to include card throwing in his act. He would then actually use cards that he made himself. He would sign them and throw them into the audience as souvenirs.
Oh, cute.
Right. Then there's another magician named Howard Thurston, who would also have card throwing as a major part of his act. He would use heavier cards than what are usually used by what we use today. Ricky Jay, who passed away a few years ago, was one of the most well-known people recently to use card throwing in their during their performances and stuff like that. They even have different type of grips. Herman would grip it a certain way and Thurston would grip it a different way to, how you would throw the cards and stuff like that. Now, all right, here's one. How far do you think what is the farthest that someone has been record? Sorry, how do we say this? What is the world record for the farthest playing card thrown?
47 feet.
65.96 meters, which is 216 feet.
That's a lot of feet. Sorry, I'm a sloppy American. I do things in not.
Well, metrics. I just told you feet also. That's fine.
I know. It's amazing.
The record is held by Rick Smith Jr., who did this on the 2nd of December 2002. So remember, it's been over 20 years that nobody's been able to throw something further. Okay.
That's pretty impressive.
Right. He actually also has the world record for the fastest throw that it went 148 kilometers per hour, which is almost 92 miles per hour. Ricky
nuts.
Jay held the record beforehand, before Rick Smith passed him. What about the highest throw?
That I can't.
Okay, so that's also.
I'm going to go with my 40.
It's also
again.
Rick Smith. On the 14th of March 2015, he threw a card to the height of 21.41 meters, which is 70 feet. Yeah, damn, seriously.
That's crazy.
Yeah. What about accurate?
And can you do that straight? Or is
I have
some
no
sort
idea.
Of arc to that?
No idea.
I told you, I think of the weird things.
It's just the highest throwing. So I'm assuming he tried throwing it straight up because the arc wouldn't let him go as high, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting.
Okay. What do you think? Okay. There's a someone named Aditya Kadmer, okay, who on the 11th of December 2021 created the world record for the most accurate playing card throws. With how many cards did he get without missing?
172.
Oh, you were so close. I thought you were really going to get it because it's 117. I heard the 107. I was
wow.
Oh, well. Sorry. 117. Okay.
That's okay.
Yeah. No, that's just crazy. Now, what do you think the record is for the number of cards thrown in 1 minute?
In 1 minute?
Yes. 122.
Oh, I almost thought of that.
The previous record was 114.
I thought of doubling it.
Yeah, the previous record was 114. There's also an urban legend that it can actually be used as a weapon, that it can kill someone or seriously injure them, things like that. But
yikes!
Mythbusters proved that that's not possible.
Thanks, Mythbusters.
You would get a paper cut. That's the amount of damage that one can do.
Yeah, those are painful
Yeah,
though.
apparently there are numerous Batman cartoons where the Joker uses them, where he throws
Oh,
cards.
sure. Slash the throats and stuff. Yeah.
That's right. But you know, not real, unfortunately.
Mythbusters popped that bubble for us.
Apparently. Yeah.
Using a playing card.
Correct. I mean, that's pretty much all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else you want to talk about before we get into the script?
No, I. A lot of cool trivia in that one, though.
Yes. Later in the week we'll have some that have less, but you know, we'll start off.
All right.
So
Got a fun
what I
week.
like here is the descriptive nature of the script. Okay, so it says fades in. First of all, the couple doesn't appear in the script at all. This was something that Rob Reiner apparently decided to add in afterwards because it's,
Oh, I didn't know that. That's
this
interesting.
is the first one that we didn't, that is not in the script. It might appear later in the script, but at this point in the script, it doesn't appear. And so the description in the script is a tight shot of one of those toy felt birds that somehow is able to miraculously keep dunking its beak into a glass of water. Wider to
Miraculously.
reveal Harry is sitting in his office, staring blankly at this ornithological phenomenon. As Harry stares, we hear the sound of a phone ringing. It's picked up by Sally. And then they have their conversation. And then it says, as Harry continues to stare at the bird, we hear a few lines of dialogue from Casablanca, of all the gin joints, etc. And then it cuts to Harry in his apartment. And it says, Harry is trying to hang pictures in what is an otherwise virtually empty apartment. He checks the picture for placement against the wall. And then we have part of the dialogue from Harry when he talks about Victor Laszlo. You know, it's all in his voiceover. And then it says, holding his finger on the spot, he gently taps the nail into the wall. Harry gives the nail one more tap, and a big chunk of plaster comes out of the wall. Harry surveys it, then decides to leave the picture against the wall on the floor. He walks away. Yeah.
Sounds pretty appropriate.
So, and that's pretty much the only differences that they have here in the script for today. So every Monday we have a segment called Meg Ryan Monday,
Yes.
where my guests will give their top five Meg Ryan performances.
Yes.
So what have you got for us today,
Oh,
Lisa?
so it's interesting. So now that you're saying top
Start
five,
from number five and work your way
I
up.
will. So talking about top five Meg Ryan performances, I actually went Meg Ryan movies. So now I'm wondering if I would have,
That's fine
I wouldn't,
also.
yeah, but see, it's different. So I wonder if I would have changed
Of course it's different.
my mind. Because I did have to kind of, you know, of course, I didn't include it in my top five, but honorable mention to Amityville 3D. Because what's a Lisa Leahy lift without some horror in it, especially god awful horror. So one of my favorites is Kate and Leopold, that ridiculous
Okay.
thing she did with Hugh Jackman, where he's like sort of, I don't even remember context because it's been so long since I've seen it, but it was enough that I bought a copy on DVD and own it. But you know, like he's sucked out of his time era and brought into the modern day, and so of course it's a whole fish out of water silliness thing. But one of those, you know, saccharine kind of romantic comedy movies. And then I went to The Doors, which is just a brilliant film in and of itself. You know, she's not she's she obviously she's a player in the film, but she's not Val Kilmer. You know, she's not Jim Morrison in this film. So it's a brilliant movie. And of course, I couldn't leave it off the list. Sleepless in Seattle is my number third because it's sort of like,
You're number
it's my
third.
number third. Yes, I speak English. I speak English good. I have 2 degrees in English and I actually said number third. This is what happens when I'm, you know, off, you know, I'm on vacation. So my brain does not function. And it's my birthday brain, so we're going to leave me alone. But anyway, Sleepless in Seattle,
Okay.
sort of like that quintessential romance movie from the 90s. And then my number two is another one where Meg herself is not a major focus, but darn it, it's a brilliant movie. Go with Top Gun, because you have to. You know, she's playing Goose's wife, and she's just that whole sequence when they're in the bar, you know, as a family playing on the piano. It's just such a wonderful, wonderful scene. And you don't need to be in the whole movie to make that big of an impact. And she definitely does a great job. And number one, of course, the reason I am here, When Harry Met Sally. I didn't want to leave it off the list because it is my favorite of hers. So I could not discount it for her performances in my top five.
Okay. That is completely fair. So Lisa, you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you and send you a birthday present?
You can find me on the web through rabbitholepodcasts.com, where I am part of a network of a whole bunch of shenanigans. You can hear me on Whatever with Jason Soto, in which Jason and Rob Branch and I talk about whatever Jason wants. You can hear me also with Jason on a podcast called Between the Scares, through which we discuss every film that Jason Blum and Blumhouse Productions have put out, which is music to my horror-loving heart. And you can also catch me on my brother in the it's in some sort of vortex of God knows what's going on, but we have a podcast called The Sib List, S-I-B-L-I-S-T, and we have four different lists that we choose from to watch our movies. Unfortunately, our last episode was released in July of last year, and hopefully we'll get our act together.
Well, it's only middle February, towards the end of February.
We got to get our act together. It's a problem because my brother's schedule changed, and it was just sort of a lot of bad scheduling, so we'll get our act together eventually, I hope. But we do have some fun episodes in the backlog. So, and SpongeBob was one of our best. So go check out the SpongeBob episode, if not some of the others. And you can also catch me on the Lambcast quite a bit because Richard Kirkham hasn't found a way to get rid of me yet. So I show up on there quite a bit, even though it's not officially my podcast. So.
Okay. All right. That's fair. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, or you can go directly to my website, movierobminute.com. So once again, happy birthday to Lisa. And hopefully you won't party too hardy tonight, and therefore you'll be able to come back again tomorrow.
I hope so. I mean, I'm getting to the point where, you know, partying too much makes it hurt in the morning. So can't do that.
All right. Understandable. Especially when you have to get up for work.
True,
you
know, true. Well, not this week. I'm on vacation this week.
Right. Okay. Now, for your birthday, that's a great reason to take off.
This is why. Yeah, why not? Up here in the Northeast, we have February vacation, and I like to tell my students, you're welcome. It's because of me. You get a full week off from school.
There you go. Great. All right. So until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
Gave me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you, wonderful you, had to be you.